Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rotolo. I'm also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everyone to the program today. I hope people are going to call in to the program today. It's called ADD Anonymous. And we would like people to call in and just really talk to Chris and I a little bit about what's going on in your life that's related to ADD. You know, is it positive things? Is it negative things? Something that you maybe just want to talk about because it's been bothering you? Because I think what Chris and I have recognized is that when we self-disclose to other people about ourselves and our struggles or the positives, that people begin to feel more comfortable and they self-disclose at the same time. So before Chris and I begin the program, I want to give you the phone number to call in, and that would be area code 917-889-7025. And also, I just want to remind everybody who's in the Los Angeles area that I run two adult support groups for CHAD, children and adults with ADD. One is in Torrance, California. It's located at 2785 Pacific Coast Highway at the Center for Learning Unlimited. That's a school in Torrance that's dedicated to children with ADHD and autism. It's a wonderful program. And that group is Wednesday nights from 7:30 to 9. That group has been going on for 5-plus years now. Really excited about what's happening in that group. A lot of growth, a lot of love, a lot of the same people that have been there for years and years keep coming back. The other group, which is fairly new, I started it the last week in June in 2014, is located in Culver City, and it's 6666 Green Valley Circle. That's the SHARE building. The SHARE building is a building that houses a lot of 12-step programs. So we've got a lot of love in that building. In fact, we moved the group. We had to, and we could have moved back to our other building, but the members of my group really wanted to stay there because we all felt the energy when we walked into that building the first time. So it's also a wonderful group, fairly new, but everybody there is just really hungry for information. They want to get better. They want to get in control of their negative symptoms, and it's just a lot of fun. So without further ado, I'm going to bring Chris on the phone. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Justine.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you, and how are you?
I'm great.
Excellent.
So I'm hoping people are going to call in. I'm going to periodically give the number during the show so people would call us and talk to us a little bit about what's going on in their lives related to ADD. And so I'm going to ask you, I mentioned that my feeling is when we self-disclose that people tend to open up. And talk about that.
Right. I've known about my ADD now for a little over 4 years. And in the beginning, it was a close hold secret because of all the stigma attached to it. But as I started going down this path and becoming more self-aware and in a better place, I would talk about it more. And moreover, people would share little bits and pieces over the course of time, and I'd kind of put one and one and one together and maybe I was assuming that maybe they have it as well, and I would share that I suffer from ADHD, capital H, and that these are the things I experience. And I found that as soon as I did that, a lot of people felt comfortable in sharing that, as I was growing up, I had it, and I was on Ritalin or some other type medication, and some people are still on, some are off. But feeling comfortable that you're not the only other person out there, I think is very liberating. Doing the show today is pretty exciting because it's an opportunity for people who maybe aren't there yet to reach out to us or to somebody else and say, hey, this is what I feel.
So it's interesting because my son this past Thanksgiving in 2013, both my sons were here for Thanksgiving, and we had the group the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and they came. And my older son, who's in recovery, said to me, it was interesting, Mom, you know what you did here? You recreated a home meeting of AA. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of acceptance. There's self-disclosure, but there's, you know, also the feeling that this is anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess when we talked about this idea...
This is the group that's in Torrance.
In Torrance, because the one in Culver City hadn't even begun yet.
Okay.
But when we talked about this idea, the first thing I thought about was that I'm in Al-Anon, and I've been to open AA meetings, and it's a powerful venue. It really is. And I feel like our group, which you've been to, both mm-hmm. of them, is the same thing. They all know that what they talk about is going to stay there. We don't go out and we don't gossip about each other, which is one of the rules of AA and Al-Anon. And we love each other. There's a lot of love. So I'm trying to recreate, I guess we are on the phone today, the feeling of that group, that people can call in and they can talk to us about, you know, anything they want to talk to us about, and we will be there for them and
mm-hmm.
listen, and we will self-disclose at the same time. And so I thought to start off, you and I might talk a little bit about, I know we're both doing mindfulness and meditation, and with that we're getting a little bit better, but let's talk about some of the negative symptoms and how we still struggle with them a little bit.
Well, a coworker of mine, a former coworker, she works in an organization I used to work at, but I sent out the link to the first show that I had been on because I was so excited about doing it. She had listened to it, and she's not ADD.
Right.
And what I asked people to do, I sent it to God and everybody and said, just send it to people who you think might benefit from it. But she did listen to it, which I found surprising. And she said that I didn't recognize or realize what being ADD really was, because everybody jokes about it. Oh, that's such an ADD thing to do. Well, the reality is that there's a whole list of things when you really have ADD, and some of them aren't really fun. The lack of mindfulness, the impulsivity, the and the list goes on. So in my own case, impulsivity was one of those bigger issues, struggling with, and I'm still at times find myself getting ready to pull the trigger on something and go, oh no, I gotta wait and think about this. And I think emotional dysregulation is probably the biggest. It was what I struggled with, and I was going through treatment and a divorce at the same time, so. In many ways, my own journey's kind of convoluted, and I don't quite separating the pieces parts becomes a challenge at times. But that inability to regulate my emotions at times was hell. But I didn't talk about it. It's not something, especially being a man, it's not something that people want to hear.
Right.
There were people who at the time I did talk to, very, very close friends. And to be honest, there were times I, be sitting in my office at work, cry my eyes out, with people who were very close to me. But as a whole, I wouldn't share that emotion outside at that time. Now, at this point now, I'm more comfortable with, outwardly exhibiting those types of feelings I think in so doing, it enables people, it's not permission, but you feel okay saying, yeah, this is what I feel like too, because we feel a lot of the same things, but unless somebody else says, I feel that too, we oftentimes feel that we're the only person who feels that. In the meetings in Torrance, one of the beautiful things about it was, you would talk about your feelings. I think it was so important that you would share those experiences in your life with the group and about the struggles that you had, that you had this group, but you were still, plowing through these things. And I think that was a huge motivator for myself, and I know for others, to go, wow, she hasn't got it worked out yet, but she's definitely made a lot of progress, and I want to get to where you're at. And I continue to be there trying to get to that next point to where you're going, because at that point, then, it's all an open book. This is where I was, this is where I'm at, and life's great.
Yeah, and, you know, the interesting thing is that I thank you for, you know, for what you said about, you know, the work that I've done, because I'm really proud of it. But I'm not up here. I'm right here with you.
No,
every day I struggle, you know, to maintain what I've been doing, because having ADHD, consistency at times can be very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that I, you know, every day when I get up, I have different mantras that I say. You know, today I want to live, I want to be whole, not happy, but whole, because adversity is going to come up during the day, so mm-hmm. I have to deal with that. I also try to live my life in the middle, you know, and these are things that we are extremist. We swing from one extreme to the other extreme, and
oh, yeah.
That has a lot to do with emotional regulation. And yes, I do share about a lot of my struggles, because I think it's important for people to understand that we grow developmentally until the day we die. So it's not like, okay, so you do 5 years of mindfulness, meditation, and all the other steps that we do to get better, and then you're done. No, you're never done. So I think that that's something that I want everybody who's listening to understand, that it's something that's a way of life now for me. It has to be.
There's the growth aspect of it, which I think that never ends. That is always a never-ending thing. But I think as far as fortunately, the list of negative symptoms is only so long. So you've got it or you don't. And once you've worked through that, and I wasn't trying to say that you put yourself on a pedestal.
No.
It's that you have gained so much control over so many of those negative symptoms. And I'm still working it. Shift is a good one. The ability to go from one thing to another fairly quickly. I still struggle with that because my mind is stuck on a path. I'm going to do this.
Right.
And then suddenly plans change, and I've got to now go 90 degrees out. And it's a hard, still hard, but not nearly as hard as it was, where I would just hunker down and wouldn't go for do anything.
Right. And I think that's something that's very similar, would you say, to multitasking? Shifting, multitasking, is it?
Well, yes and no. So okay. It's more of where I'm going someplace, or I'm doing something with an intended outcome, and that outcome changes,
okay.
Or I'm not going to that place anymore.
Okay.
So multitasking is I'm doing A, B, and C, and I'm trying to divide my time between those. That's also a little bit of a struggle, because I got to stop one task, move on to the next one, and it I guess as a result of that, yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but it probably does impact that. But definitely, it was one of the things that Barbara would mention, that you don't change your direction terribly, you know, very well. And I would get angry and exhibit all those things that we wish we didn't.
So let me give you an example, okay?
Okay.
And if I'm wrong, you can tell me. But what I noticed years ago about myself was that I may be on my way to the supermarket, and I've got a list of things that I've got to get, and I get a phone call from home that says, oh, I need you to come back because the boys have to go to soccer. And so what are you talking about? I'm on my way to the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go get all this stuff. What do you mean I have to come back now? Well, I can't do it. You need to do it. And, you know, too bad. That's just the way it was. That was the last husband who couldn't ever do anything for anybody except himself. So that would really set me off,
mm-hmm.
because my mind was set on this list that I had of things that I needed to get, and now I was disrupted. And so I would get really upset.
It's exactly the same thing.
Okay.
Where you're I would be on a path to going, literally going physically someplace, or like at home, I've got a finite amount of time. Come home at the end of the day, I have X amount of time left, and I get a phone call, and somebody needs something, and I would get upset about it. And, you know, I look back on it now and go, oh my gosh, really? You know, but that was, that shift was so difficult. And it was because it was a self-protection, I think, in many cases. That's one of those things that is part of my ADD, plus there's other things, I think, tied into it as well.
Right.
But as I become comfortable with where I'm at, shifting becomes easier. I still struggle with it. It sometimes, especially with larger things that I've invested time in, to see something move is frustrating. But, and I probably everybody, well, I'm not going to say probably, but possibly, most people would struggle with that. But
I think a lot of us in this population do, especially with the big H piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
What I find, it's very interesting, but the inattentive type, the ones that, what I like to say is they are so creative that they're up thinking about all their creative stuff when you're talking to them, and they're like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, you told me that? Yeah, no, I did. Like, this is my younger son. Yeah, I did. Oh, did I acknowledge that? Yeah, you kind of did. Oh, okay, well, I really wasn't listening. He doesn't change for him. Isn't as difficult. I don't see him emote
mm-hmm.
the way I see other people with the big H piece of this
right.
when that changing on a dime has to happen.
Well, I would first qualify it by saying that my own definition of the big H is, and I've got at least two people that I can apply this to, if you've spent more than, you know, a portion of your childhood sitting in emergency rooms for a variety of things, in my case it was stitches, I was all the time doing something that would require them. In my son's case, who's also big H, he would break bones. So he picked another thing. Dad's already got stitches. I'm going to try something else. So that's how it manifested when we were younger. As I'm now 47, so I'm starting to slow down just by virtue of my age.
Haven't been in the emergency room?
Well, I fortunately don't do that anymore. But because I've already checked that block growing up. But it's a constant moving. It's not just your mind now. It's your body. That going here, going there, doing this, doing that, not being mindful about oftentimes what it is that I'm doing.
Right.
Mowing the lawn when I really should be inside balancing my checkbook because I have no idea how much money I have.
Right. That's what I like to call exiting. So believe it or not, I'm sure people will laugh at this, but I used to use my laundry when I had a washer and dryer in the house as an exit. And it was great because everybody thought that was great because I was getting laundry done, but really I wasn't doing what I needed to do. That was just my way of escaping or exiting what needed to be done, might have been creating fear for me,
mm-hmm.
the other things that I just didn't want to look at, the bills or my checkbook or whatever it was that I was supposed to be doing. So, I mean, I noticed that people will do that. You know, they're on the internet, kids. They're on the internet, they're doing homework. They exit off to YouTube because they want to watch some group singing. And next thing you know, 2 hours have gone by and none of their homework is done, you know, because there's fear in that homework.
Right.
But there isn't any fear on YouTube watching New Direction or One Direction or whatever their name is. They're so bad, that group, but that's besides the point. It's okay. See, that's my impulse.
I'm gonna avoid that one because...
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. I never thought, because I do the same thing. The exiting, I just never put a label to it. And going outside doing the lawn was one of those things. I like being outside. I enjoy it. Or going out in the garage. I've got all that wood shop equipment. And we'd go out there and just do something as opposed to doing a repair on the house that needed to be done.
Right.
Or on one of the vehicles or something else that really required attention that I found boring.
Right.
Wow, I got to do this
well,
again.
Boring, yeah, that's a big one. We hate boring.
Boring's bad.
Boring's bad.
But it's got to be done. Like, I still change oil in my own car. It, you know, when it costs me $50 to get it done or $75, and I can go get all this stuff for $25 and do it myself in about 15 minutes.
Right.
However, I'll have the equipment. I'll have everything. I know it takes only 15 minutes, and I have a pair of coveralls in the garage. Slide them on, do what I got to do, wash my hands when I'm done, take the coveralls off. I'm done. Yet, I'll put it off. And so I'm like 5,010 or, you know, 5,100 miles, 52. I get to 5,500. I'm going, okay, now I'm 10% over the line. I really need to do this, but it's boring. I don't want to do it. So I'll go just mow the lawn one more time this week, you know.
Which brings us into a conversation you and I were having before the show started, and that's on the topic of motivation,
mm-hmm.
which I have a lot of my own clients who tell me that they struggle every day with motivation. I see it a lot in especially teenagers. And I also see it in adults that, you know, they just don't have that intrinsic motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are articles written about this, about people with ADD. And a lot of people will talk about depression and, you know, I'm feeling depressed and maybe that's part of it. I love Gabor Maté, who is a doctor and an author and wrote the book Scattered, which I absolutely love that book. You know that. And he says that especially where adolescents and young adults are concerned, that there is absolutely no chance of internal motivation without autonomy. Okay? So, which brings us to emotional individuation, which it's all about being adults and emotionally growing up. And so are we really autonomous?
Pull the thread a little bit, codependency and how that factors into that. So that's a good point, that if you don't feel that what you're doing is for you or will benefit you in some way or another, or that you're not oftentimes in adult relationships we find ourselves in, where, and I've heard so many times, mother or the father, the non-ADD parent, is raising one extra child, which happens to be the other
exactly.
parent. And in so many ways, I was that parent, but not always. So being that child, it's like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? You know, what's the benefit to it?
Exactly.
And if there's no benefit, there's no payoff. Then it just doesn't happen.
So I was thinking to myself today, driving back from my office to come up here to do the show, I was thinking that I am really the person who pays the bills in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, I was that person who was paying the bills. But I wasn't doing a very good job of paying the bills because I wasn't individuated. I wasn't an adult emotionally. I was still very much a child. And so I would be spending money when we didn't have it. And, you know, I'm not talking about a little bit of money. I'm talking about a lot of money that I would spend. And then the bills would come up and I wouldn't have the money. And I would then go to my partner at the time and start crying, like, you don't help me, and why don't you help me? And so I'm driving up here thinking, wow, I mean, this is just so incredible. I am the person responsible for bills, and Steve, my husband now, never asked me one question, like, do we have enough money? Is everything okay? And because he really knows and believes that I am following through.
Mm-hmm.
I am getting this done. I am motivated now because I'm an adult to take care of my family first, and then if we have some money left over, if there's things that I want, not need, then I can go out and get those things. Whereas before, it was a complete train wreck.
Going back to what you said about individuation and that emotional maturity, that plays into that so much, because the irresponsible behavior, I was, in different ways, the same thing. My wife didn't trust me enough to hold the checkbook. I was dangerous. so she held it. Plus, just the numbers, you know, doing that. Numbers was not my thing. Ironically, my son is. He does very well with that. So, but going back to the emotional part, if you feel like a, you know, a little kid, I don't want to wash. I don't want to take a bath, or I don't want to, you know, wash the car. I don't want to do this stuff. It's very childish behavior. And I can't tell you how many times I look back and I go, how my ex-wife, you know, put up with that as long as she did. I don't know. And she stuck it out, and especially because we didn't know. We just didn't know what was going on until my son was diagnosed and I was diagnosed, and then the light started coming on about, wow, so this is what's what. And then finding out, wow, emotionally, I'm still got a long way to go. And right now I'm spending that time by myself trying to figure out who am I. It takes a little time, but through this process, you know, that you've laid out, it's all getting clearer day by day. And I can look back and go, wow, I did behave that way. And I think in so many ways I didn't take accountability for a lot of things. And it's embarrassing. It really is. But that's the nature of who we are in so many ways, and it's the nature of who I was.
So when you talk about it being embarrassing in the world of mindfulness and meditation and all that work we do about being in the moment, then that's where you're giving yourself compassion mm-hmm. for the past. I mean, the past is gone. There's nothing we can do about it. Giving yourself compassion and being in the present moment really helps with that whole individuation piece as well. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, a child will continue to throw temper tantrums about not getting a stuffed animal 3 days ago.
Right.
An adult understands, well, okay, 3 days ago I made a mistake. You know, I forgot to do something that I told my wife or my husband that I was going to do, but I'm going to forgive myself. I'm going to give myself compassion for this, and I'm just going to move on. And if the people in my life that are part of this whole circle don't understand that I've apologized and said I'm sorry, well, that's their issue. That's not mine. See, that's the whole adult piece of this whole thing, where I think that we grew up hearing lazy, stupid, procrastinator, whatever you want to say, on mm-hmm. and on and on. That was my name. Now, when you're an adult, you put that away, and you really look at the positive things you're accomplishing every single day, because I know that you are, and I know I am.
Mm-hmm.
We're accomplishing things that we didn't accomplish before.
Right. Listening to one of your shows a couple weeks back, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he was talking about yelling at the television, and you were saying you can't do that, and he goes, that's not normal. And I was chuckling when I was listening to it. It was when I was in Maryland, so I would listen to it in the mornings, and I was laughing, going, oh my gosh, you know, having those flashbacks of the that behavior of just being that immature individual, but being traumatized at a young age and then putting up that wall, that protective wall. Instead of growing emotionally, I was growing a wall, so I stopped growing emotionally. And this is one of those very embarrassing for me memories going back. I talked about having a wood shop, and there was an item that I wanted, a mortiser, $250 at the time, and this is years ago. And I remember, for whatever reason, it just, wife was saying, we can't do it right now. And essentially had a temper tantrum. I'm a 30-year-old man having a temper tantrum. And as we talked about earlier, I didn't question it. I just, that was how I was. And I think that's how my wife viewed me, how my son saw me. And to go back and say, well, that is who I was, because I didn't have faith in myself. That's what really Larice pointed out to me about individuation, was trusting the adult within ourselves to be the adult when the adult needed to be present. Doesn't mean I can't go, you know, screwing around with the shopping carts with my son in the shopping market like we used to do. But when push comes to shove and I've got to be the adult, I can then step out of that being having fun to going, okay, well, this has to be done now. It's the right thing.
And I think what you're saying, too, is that in giving that little child inside of you compassion and love, in writing the letter like I did, I know Reese did that, too, to that little child, and kind of just going through all the things that her and I went through together
mm-hmm.
as we were growing up, which was very difficult, it really helped that little child to feel like she could trust me,
mm-hmm.
that I was now taking care of her. And so I will put my hand over my heart a lot because there are times when that little child may want to come out. And, you know, I just want to give her the love and compassion, which is in some ways what you're talking about, because what you're able to do now is if you want something, you don't throw a temper tantrum over it. You say, no, I can't have that right now.
Right.
I've got to figure out how to work towards that.
Right. Take the adult steps of working towards something as opposed to that child who just wants now and gets now, wants, gets.
Right.
That's not a very mature way of doing things, not a very mature way of looking at it. And that was pervasive throughout not just material things, but my relationships with people and how I did things.
So here's something I'd like to talk about. And just let me stop for a minute and give everybody the number again. It's 917-889-7025. If anybody wants to call in, just talk to us a little bit about what's going on in their life related to ADD.
Mm-hmm.
But I was working with somebody this morning on mindful listening. Okay, staying in the moment, setting your alarm for 3 minutes and letting the other person talk without you opening your mouth for 3 minutes. Now, sounds pretty easy, right? But people with ADHD have a very difficult time staying mindful when somebody else is talking because they have a fear that they're going to forget what they want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel like they have to interrupt. What I've discovered is that when you're truly mindful and sitting there and listening to a person tell you how they feel or talk about their strengths or whatever exercise they want to do to make this happen, magically, when you're in the moment, you can remember what it is that the other person is saying to you so you can mirror back to them when it's all over. You remember, I know what I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that sentence that you said that triggered me that I need to now respond to in a positive way. So it's positive conversation. So the reason I brought this up is one of the big complaints that I get from couples that I see, where one's ADD, the other one isn't, is the one that has ADD doesn't let the other person talk. The person tries to talk, then right away they're either defending themselves or they're jumping in there to, no, this is the way it is, and telling them how they feel. And so what's been your experience with that in your life, being married, having another relationship after that?
Mm-hmm.
How was that for you?
As you were describing that, I went, oh, my God, that's me. The same thing. That's it. That's who I am. In both relationships, ironically, I would just be there in the moment, jump into the middle of things, as opposed to, like you said, stepping back, being mindful. And I've done one of the exercises in the group where you had each of us sit there, and I think it was for 2 minutes. One person would talk, the other would listen. That's a hard thing to do, just sit there for 2 minutes listening. And then we wouldn't comment on anything that they said. I think our egos push us forward to, and I know in my own case, I've got a bloated ego that just wants to get in there and put my 2 cents in, as opposed to really allowing that individual to express themselves. And in so many ways, I didn't do that with my ex-wife. I didn't give her a voice.
Well, this is what I hear from the non-ADD member of the group.
Mm-hmm.
I hear they don't feel validated. I hear they don't feel heard.
Oh, yeah.
And that, if you can turn it around and if you can develop some empathy, I know you have empathy. There are some people out there that struggle with it. But if you can just think about how would you feel if the tables were turned and you didn't feel heard or you didn't feel validated. And the difficult thing with this kind of exercise is there are times when the member of the couple without ADD will say things to the person with ADD, and they're feeling that like they have to defend. They have to jump in right away. That's not the way it happened. No. If they would just be mindful and let the person speak, ultimately what's going to happen is there's going to become a level of trust then between both of them,
mm-hmm.
and you're not going to feel like you have to defend yourself as much as before.
Going back to something else you talked about, growing up, being called lazy, being called stupid, being called all these different names that were called emotionally, and in my case, it was definitely the case. I struggled so much in school. Defense is a way of life, and so much of the way I conducted myself was that way. Not proud of that, and in no way justifies that behavior. It just says this is where it comes from. So going back to what I'd said, I was that guy who was jumping into the conversation with my wife and really not giving her the opportunity to express herself and her feelings and being heard. So, oh yeah, it and it's destructive. It's destructive, I think, to both parties, because on the one side, she wasn't being heard. On the other side, in my own case, I had a false sense of reality. The reality is, as I get my way. No, that's not the way things are supposed to work. And it led to the collapse of my second relationship.
You know, what the interesting thing that happened this morning was I did an exercise with the wife, okay? I'm not going to get into specifics, but I did an exercise where it was something that the husband had done, okay? And after the exercise was over, where I leaned in when she was talking, so I was really listening to her and validating her, and then I validated her feelings afterwards by when I was allowed to speak, because my her 3 minutes were up, I was able to mirror back to her, to reflect back what she was saying, and then validate her. The person that had ADD, and this is, you know, it's funny because this is what happens. After it was all over, he said, now my mind is saying to me, or his ego, that's not exactly what happened. And so I said, wait a minute, does it really matter? Does it really matter? Because the bottom line is, this person that you love got hurt in this situation. So what your mind is saying, you're choosing to engage in that. Instead of just noticing it, like we say in mindfulness,
Right. Catching
it and saying, let it be, right? And really having the feelings of, wow, this person really got hurt. This person that I love got really hurt. I think there's just so much of a need to listen to those thoughts that are talking about something about the past, first of all, and wanting to justify exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that all comes from our childhood. That all comes from stuff that happened to us years ago, where if we all grew up and we all felt like we were heard and validated, this wouldn't be going on. So that's where that past, the schemas, all that stuff comes from that we all need to be able to work on.
Well, in my own situation, I was married 23 years, and I'm trying to remember what year. It was probably a year or two before things really started turning south and we ended up getting divorced. We went to a therapist here in Ventura where we live, and she did something that had never been done with us before, where one person would express their feelings, the other person had to paraphrase what they heard, And then the person who said it either said, yes, that's what I meant, or no, restated it until that message. And it took a long time. Problem was, is that even though I was hearing what she was saying, I wasn't honoring her feelings. And that goes back to my own insecurity. And that's yet another thing that I don't think is covered in the, it's not a direct or a first order effect of ADD, it's a second order effect. We have all these problems, and as a result of that, internally, just a train wreck.
Yeah, because, you know, our brains are going like Ferraris, you know? I mean, they're just like running all the time, and it's a very good point about validating the feelings, because what I find is many people with ADD have a very difficult time, first of all, identifying and then processing emotion. So you can say to me, yes, I'm hearing everything you're saying, but you don't get what's underneath that. You don't know that I'm sad or I'm hurt
mm-hmm.
or I'm angry. You're not really understanding that. You're just really just kind of saying, well, you know, I'm hearing you. I validate it. Okay. So we have somebody on the line that wants to share, which
Excellent.
Is great. This is Gail. So you're going to put her on? Gail.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
It's good to hear from you. Gail and I are friends on Facebook. And Gail, I want to introduce you to Chris. He's on the phone, too.
Hello, Gail.
I've been listening off and on. I keep getting losing reception. I'm driving through the Columbia Gorge right now. So.
Oh, okay.
If I suddenly vanish, that's why.
Okay. So you want to share?
Well, yeah, I mean, where do we start?
Well, just tell us whatever it is you feel like you want to talk about. We'd love to hear about it.
Let's see. I can talk to what I've heard. I mean, I've heard lots of different topics, and I've had, you know, lots of things to say about each. Good thing it was on mute.
So why don't you tell us how ADD has affected your life? Why don't we start there?
Okay, well, before I'm almost at my 2-year anniversary of discovering that I had it.
Okay.
So before then, I thought I was an idiot. And I kind of just survived life until I got old and died, I guess. I didn't really have a purpose or anything. So I guess I'll go through how I discovered it. There's that meme on Facebook that talks about not being able to sleep, so you try counting sheep. It's one sheep, two sheep, cow, turtle. Old McDonald had a farm. Hey, Montana. And I really identified with that a lot. I was like, oh, that's me. And then I won a photo shoot with a friend's mom. And so we were doing that. And I don't remember what I said, but I just joked around about having ADD. And she's like, oh, I do. And I said, oh, okay. And so we started talking about it. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I could. And then, I don't know, October, a couple years ago, I couldn't sleep. So I was like, I'm going to Google that ADD and see what it's all about. I read my biography. And then as soon as I did that, I was like, oh, my God, I've got to find out more about this. I need a support group, blah, 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 blah. So I got on the attention deficit disorder like page, and I wrote the admin there, and I was like, I posted, and I was like, I just discovered this, and I was talking about all the emotions I was going through, and you know, how come nobody ever figured this out? My dad's got 2 psychology degrees, so why he never figured that, I don't know. He has it too, by the way.
Yeah, I know. That's so interesting. It really is.
Yeah, and that's a long story there, too. If you ever need me to shut up, just say so, because I'll just go on and on.
No, I love this, because you talked about how you found out, really, by sharing with somebody else, which is why we came up with this whole show today, you know, the ADD Anonymous, because what Chris and I are saying is that we're noticing when we self-disclose to people, then they all of a sudden start talking about their own symptoms of mm-hmm. ADD. Yeah.
Well, she was the one that knew about it already. I was just clueless, making a joke. But
right.
That's why I don't have a problem with people joking about it, because I think it opens doors.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
Let's see, where was I? Derailed.
You had gone on to Facebook. You had gone on to Google.
Right.
In the middle of the night because you couldn't sleep and you saw. So then you went on Facebook.
The like page.
Right.
So I wrote that, and the next day, like, a friend commented on it. I'm like, oh, crap, I thought this was just on the like page. I didn't know it was going to my wall. And I couldn't erase it. And then, like, my husband said something to me about, because I said stuff about my dad on there, like, he never figured it out. And my husband's like, did you really mean to say that about your dad? Blah, blah, blah. And my mom, she wrote me, and she's like, why did you say that about your father? Da, 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 da. And then people are telling me I'm so brave for writing that. Like, oh, my God. So I wrote the admin, and I was like, can you please remove my post? And apparently he couldn't. I don't know why. Because then I was like, I really need a support group, and I couldn't find it. I don't know why I couldn't find it, because there's like 100 of them. So I made one, and I showed it to the admin at the like page, and I was like, hey, do you have a support group? Well, if you don't, here's one I made, so you can use it. I've really, you know, I could use your help promoting it so that we can build a support group. Next thing I know, I'm an admin of the like page. It's like,
wow.
Okay. So first thing I did was remove my post, and then we started to advertise on the like page on there with the support group. It's a secret one, so we had to create a new Facebook profile so that we could friend people on that and not have a bunch of strangers on our own page.
Okay. And so when you started the support group on Facebook, were you able to reach out to a lot of people?
Yeah, we had, I don't remember if it's 500 or 600 people on that. Our like page is 11,000 fans, but unfortunately Facebook hides it, so only about 100 people see any of our posts.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's tough. And, you know, we're all volunteers, so we're not going to pay to boost our posts.
Okay. And, you know, Gail, what I notice about you is you are extremely creative, because I've seen you post art. Yeah. Yeah, you're very creative.
Oh, in the art gallery?
Yeah, it's amazing.
I don't think I'm that much of an artist. I'm more of a photographer. That's what I was doing in the gorgeous taking pictures.
Yeah, but what I'd seen I thought was really good.
Oh, thank you.
And that's where I see the gift.
Okay. Since the support group, we've created a lot of other groups. We have our art gallery. We have a Christian group. It's not very active, but, you know, it's been a
okay.
little bit. We have a significant others group. That's not actually with my admin team. I teamed up with another girl on that one, and people join about once a month and nobody talks. There's a Club ADD, which is a singles group, and people join that, say hello, and nobody responds. So it's kind of quiet there. I'm really
That's
surprised.
Typical.
Yeah.
That's great. So you have a lot of, you're very busy with Facebook. You have a lot of stuff going on.
It's a full-time job. I wish I got paid.
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. Chris and I were talking before about motivation and how sometimes, well, a lot of times in this population of ours, that is something that we struggle with. What do you do about that? Do you struggle with motivation, or are you a pretty motivated individual?
It depends on the task.
See?
If it's cleaning my house, it just doesn't happen. I got started on it yesterday. I was folding laundry while I was on the phone with my dad. And after I got off the phone with my dad, I ended up in the garden for the rest of the day.
Okay.
I totally intended to spend the whole day cleaning the house, and I got half the laundry folded, and that was it. And I did a load of dishes this morning, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you made a dent in it, which is good, right?
An insignificant dent.
But no, it's a good point.
Have a company.
It's a good point that you made, because this is what we were saying, is when it's boring, we just don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's something that makes us... Go ahead, Gail. I'm sorry.
On the phone. I was just going to say, I do better. I stay on task better when I'm communicating with somebody. Music doesn't do it for me. The TV doesn't do it for me. But if I'm chatting with somebody, or if I'm typing to them and, you know, bouncing back and forth between sending a message or actually verbally talking to somebody, I can stay on task a lot better.
That's very interesting. So
yeah.
Are you talking about talking face-to-face or on the phone?
Yeah, either way.
So you're able to stay on task.
Something to keep my thoughts going, I guess.
That's an interesting thing. I'd never heard that before.
No, I haven't either.
I listen to music a lot in doing the things that I do, so my brain's got something going in the background, and my son can't do his homework without music going. And I used to be the same way when I was younger. But to be talking with somebody, which is very dynamic, when you listen to music, it's the same thing over and over and over.
Right.
If you're talking to somebody, it's fluid, and it goes here and there, which is a challenge to the brain. And meanwhile, your body's doing this mundane task of changing the oil or, you know, the stupid things I got to do. So
that's very interesting.
I start calling family members when I have to change my oil. My mom will say, "Oh, are you changing your oil again? I haven't talked to you in about 3 months."
That's very good. I like this. No, that's very interesting, Gail. I had never heard that.
Mm-mm.
Like, no, I really haven't. That's great. You should share more about that. Maybe there's more people out there that have the same thing.
I also find rock a lot more relaxing than easy listening music. I find easy listening irritating. Yeah.
So you like,
so
you listen to rock more, you said?
Uh-huh. You know, like the song Radioactive, have you heard that one? That one just chills out. I love that song. Or a lot of U2. I play a lot of U2.
Wow. Okay.
I don't like love ballads. I don't like, you know, I like really intense stuff.
Wow.
I find that more relaxing than anything.
It's pretty
incredible. It melts me.
Yeah. Now, I've heard other people tell me that, especially some of my teenagers that I work with. They'll tell me that they love the heavy metal stuff when they're doing their homework, and that really helps them to focus.
I'm near 40, so I'm not a teenager.
Right. But you sound like you are one, though, Gail. Because your voice is very young. Gail, what about ruminations, thoughts, negative thoughts? Do you struggle at all with them?
Oftentimes I have an abandonment issue.
Okay.
And so, and I know this has driven a wedge between friends and I that, you know, I feel abandoned by them, and then I start harassing them, and then the friendship.
Yeah, that's very difficult.
And then I get abandoned, right?
What?
Yeah. I said, and then I get abandoned.
Yes, exactly. So it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Yeah. And,
so
I warn new friends now, like, hey, I have this issue. If I get on your nerves, just tell me to back off, and I can do that. But I don't realize it until it's late.
Okay. So you're self-aware about that, which is great.
Yeah.
That's really good. So are these thoughts that you have related to the abandonment issue? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I have a history of it.
Okay.
I mean, pretty much everybody in my life, in my past, is no longer in my life, or they were gone for a period of time and now they're back.
Yeah.
That's
very difficult.
Or there's been threats of it or whatever. You know.
Yeah.
I don't have any friendships that have lasted more than just a few years, or of anyone really close. So.
Wow. That's hard. That's very difficult. Do you?
Just because move away or whatever. It's not that they want to go to you, but they, you know,
have to
or whatever. So.
Yeah. Do you use mindfulness and meditation at all?
Meditation is boring, no. Mindfulness, yeah, I think, because I was, like, not really aware of what it was so much, and I was listening to, I think it was last week's show.
Yes.
When you were talking about it, and it's like, oh, yeah, I do that. So
okay.
Not 100% of the time, but probably 85-90% of the time.
That's great. Then every time you do it, it's a new experience, and you're changing your brain. You're creating neuroplasticity, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Really is. So I'm glad that you, because Chris and I did the show last week on mindfulness and meditation. Yeah.
This may be a personal question, so you can say I defer to or decline to answer, but are you taking medication by chance?
No.
Okay. Because, and the reason I ask that is because with meditation, same problem, except it wasn't boring. I just couldn't get my brain to stop. I tried doing it. I tried to engage in meditation, but inside of 30 seconds, I was recreating something in my head. So it was just impossible to accomplish that without medication. And my goal has been to get to where Justine's at, where working myself off of that so I can still have that ability to stop, get my brain to stop, and to not have that medication enabling me to do that. It's my brain is rewired in such a way that it does it on its own anymore.
I knew that people that had ADD took meds, and I was like, there's got to be another way. I said, I don't want to be on meds. And so that was my quest, was to find ways. And I met my second coach. I found him on a support group, and we've both been kicked off since. you know, when you have your own will, they don't like that so much. But he just had a whole different approach to everything. He teaches children a lot, and he could be with them just a few months and take them from a DNF student to an A and B student, and then they're done with him forever. They never need him again. He gives them the tools they need to use their brain the way it was intended to be used. So I took his course. I didn't do so well. I never did finish it. But I've been working with a girl with dyslexia, and I've actually helped her learn to read better by playing with Play-Doh. We make the letters out of Play-Doh. And
oh, wow.
She can spell better using the Play-Doh than just, trying to spell a word out. Because she's a three-dimensional thinker.
Hmm.
So, there's a parallel to that.
That's really interesting. That's excellent.
That's an example of what he does that's so different.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's
very interesting. Yeah.
Keying into the visual aspects, because I'm very much a visual learner as well, so having that, mm-hmm. Plato's actually a pretty cool idea.
Yeah.
Having that dimensional aspect to it that, again, the brain, for whatever reason, just needs to be kept moving. And if it doesn't, if it's two-dimensional, it's flat, it's boring, we dismiss it.
Mm-hmm.
The brain goes, I don't even want to play with that. It's not worth it.
And so here's something else. I heard you say you don't do meditation, but the interesting thing is a couple of weeks ago at my Culver City group, I had a woman show up, and she was saying that she's been trying to do meditation for 30 years, and it's never worked. And I said, well, wait a minute. Are you sitting still? And she said, yeah. I said, well, then get up. She said, what? I said, get up and move around. I meditate when I drive with my eyes open because it's all about awareness. And you can do walking meditation. You can do running. You can do listening to music meditation. It's all about when the thoughts come up, just letting them be. And then they go away and then they come back.
In that case, I do shower meditation.
Okay, perfect. So you do meditate, which is great.
I guess.
Yeah, you do it in the shower. The shower is a good place for you.
That's where a lot of thoughts come to people, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You just have your emotions to go through, and you don't have a distraction. It's just you. So.
Right.
Unfortunately, sometimes I can't remember if I did things that I needed to do in the shower or not, but.
You know, that's one of the discussions I have with people, that it's kind of that key as to whether or not you have ADD. my ex-wife would not. I asked her once. I said, "When you go into the shower, is your mind just going from thing to thing to thing to thing?" And she said, "No, I'm in the shower washing myself." And I went, "Ooh, this is kind of embarrassing." But I found that ADD people, they go in the shower, for whatever reason, the water, the noise, whatever, it just sends my brain into a 100 miles an hour. And I'll ask people, "So, how does your brain go when you go in the shower?" If they say, I'm washing myself and whatever, great, then you're probably okay. But if it's the same thing, brain's going 100 miles an hour, I don't know if I wash my hair, I can't remember if I wash my feet, I got to do it all over again, then, yeah, I'm kind of resonating. That resonates with me because I'm that guy. I've got a routine in the shower. It sounds stupid.
Did you take a shower this morning? Did you make sure you washed everything?
Yes, because I got a routine. 47 years old, but I got to have this routine about, okay, I take the washcloth off right here. I put it down here. I know I've done that. I move on to the next thing because the brain is just out of control in the shower. I can't rein it in. Fortunately, when the hot water runs out, granted, you don't want to wait 20 minutes, but then I'm done.
Steve just came up behind you and went, "I got the same thing going on."
Yeah.
See, now me, I meditate in the shower. I love the shower. I know what I'm doing. I know that I washed everything and don't have to second guess it.
Oh, my gosh, how embarrassing this is. It is what it is.
I'm with you, Chris. I have gone to work and not done my hair before. I have hair products at work. I have deodorant at work. Because I have driven to work and oh my God. I completely forgot to do whatever.
Wait, I want to keep this on a funny note. Has anybody, because I've done this, was years ago, I wore two different shoes to work. Has anybody ever done that? Come on.
No.
Oh, my God, that was the funniest thing. I had two pair. I had flats that were the same, but they were different colors. I had two different shoes on. No, I personally think this.
But I haven't done it.
It's very funny.
I wore my pants inside out one time.
Oh, did you?
In middle
school. Slow down, girl.
Oh, that's great.
I'm going, okay, I haven't done the shoe thing. I haven't done, and that was probably the Army, very regimented. You got to wear the same thing every day. So fortunately, that was just another one of those things. But I'm going, no. I've driven to work, run my tongue over my teeth going, oh, crap.
Brush your teeth.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an easy fix, though. You just put a toothbrush at work.
Yeah, or pop some gum in your mouth. That's the other thing you can do, too.
I'm a habitual gum chew. I am chronic. I'm chewing gum right now.
Yeah.
We have a no gum policy at work. That's one rule I break.
Do you swallow it when they come around and check?
No, I'm a cotton head. Screw that.
I say ADD and she's defiant. Okay, just check.
Yes, she's ODD along with all the rest of them. That's right. That is very funny. Now, this is funny. See, these are the funny aspects of ADD. I mean, I used to put my keys in the refrigerator and walk around for 2 hours saying, "Where's my keys?" I mean, it's funny if you can laugh about it.
I haven't lost anything in the fridge.
Okay.
Unless it's under a layer of mold.
See
now,
I've done that. I've put the cereal in the refrigerator and I got milk in the cabinet. I've done that multiple times.
I have started to do that, but I caught myself.
That's very funny. Do you lose things easily, or are you pretty on top of that, Gail?
I lose my marbles. Okay, my phone, I'm always aware, almost always aware of where my phone is. I just forget it in my car while I went into Best Buy today.
Okay.
My key is attached to my purse.
Great.
My house key,
good
my
idea.
Key. My car is a keyless entry, so it's a proximity key. Yeah, it was very handy. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that's a great idea for people with ADD.
Yeah. So I just leave that attached to my purse. I mean, those are the two most important things, keys and phone.
Right. Right. I mean, that's great that you know where they are. You're pretty good with that.
Well, I growing up, and again, this goes back to, I don't know if it's a function of trauma or the ADD, but I am OCD when it comes to my space because my head is so, it is so much a train wreck, and I can't control what's running through my head. I keep my physical environment clean, sparse, as much as I can, so that you get a stack of papers in front of me and I'm in hell. It's bad. It's horrible.
He's a typical Navy structured person.
Don't
sorry.
Say that, Army.
Are you Army or
I
Navy?
I was Army. I retired from the Army. I went to work for the Navy.
Oh, okay. Got it backwards. Okay. So, yeah, he's a typical Army structured, which is good. I mean, that's the part of it, I think, that has helped you be successful is your structure, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
I wouldn't suggest it for everybody.
And
really, one quick note on that for those that may be listening and thinking about this, and especially the kids, Army is a great place for an ADD person because you start getting bored. It's okay because in 2 years you're moving to a different place.
Right.
The job's going to change a little
for
bit.
Years?
Everybody. Well,
yeah.
I'm sorry?
2 years.
Every
yeah.
2 years, yeah.
2 years?
Yeah.
That's
it's
too
okay.
long.
I can't wait that long.
Like 20 minutes or something.
Yeah, see, I was thinking the same thing. I'm sorry, but when you said 2 years, I was kind of thinking like 2 years. Wow, how about 2 months? Then move on to something else.
2 hours.
I was working more technical things. It took me a little while to learn. I'm a slow learner.
Oh, okay.
So that's where that worked to my advantage.
No, but you know what? The other day I was interviewed on another podcast, which will be aired in about 3 weeks, so I'll put the link up. But it was a business coach who interviewed me for people with ADD. And one of the things I discovered in doing research to talk on this podcast, one of the biggest jobs, you guys are going to laugh, for people with ADD is policemen and firemen. Because it's so different. I mean, every day you kind of do different things and you know, it keeps your I guess, creative mind going.
Mm-hmm.
I found that really interesting.
I think there are a lot of parallels between the military and those other type civil service type jobs because you're going to work in the same uniform every day. You're going to work. You're getting a paycheck the same way every time.
Right.
However, what you do from day to day, and especially in the case of firemen and policemen.
Yes.
The shifts change. You could be going out in the middle of the night or middle of the day. It's very dynamic, which is perfect. And something from one of the groups that I thought was probably the perfect job for the ADD person. And don't laugh because it sounds comical on the surface, but the reality was that one of the guys was in a circus.
Yes.
And he was a circus clown. And
yes.
He said, he explained the dynamics of it, and I went, in so many ways, that paralleled the Army. Everything was the same. Transportation was arranged for him. All he had to do was get up there and perform and to do his thing. And he had a lot of he had the ability to be very creative up there, which that was the creative outlet. He made people happy. But it was tending to all those ADD symptoms that we have. And I thought, wow.
He was on the my podcast. Probably a little less than a year ago,
mm-hmm.
talking about the power of juggling for the brain
mm-hmm.
and how it hits the same. It hits the same area of the brain when you juggle as medication does. And he has two boys who I've met are ADHD, and when they come home and they're all over the place, he has them juggle for about 20 minutes. And then they can sit down and get their homework done.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we listen to that one because it's on my website. You can go back and listen to it. He's great. Sean is great. Did you ever listen to that one, Gail?
No, but my coach teaches juggling because
it's
the right brain to the left brain. And it gets you, for lack of a better word, cancels out anxiety. Because if you are doing that focus, you can't be anxious. And he describes that on his video. It's a 20-minute video. I have a horrible, horrible right-left brain connection, which is why backspace is my favorite key, and I flunked piano. I can't get my hands to do what I want them to do all the time.
Okay.
And since I really noticed this in kickboxing, since I started doing midline exercises, which is cross crawls where you're touching your right hand to your left knee and then switching your left hand to your right knee, because I couldn't
right.
juggle. I couldn't get past the second ball. I would throw it over my shoulder all the time.
Okay.
I noticed in kickboxing, I was able to keep up with the switches better this year than I was last year.
Wow.
And I've only taken, like, 6 classes. So I took a couple
wow.
last year. Well, I only took one this year, but I noticed the switches were a lot easier because of all the midline exercises I've been doing.
It's very interesting that, you know, I think we live in a society that immediately will run to that magic bullet, which is the pill sometimes, whereas there
yeah.
are other things out there like juggling, like what she's saying, kickboxing,
mm-hmm.
you know, yoga is another one that really helps.
Jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu, okay.
I love jiu-jitsu.
Yes, it's interesting you say that because I sent one of my clients to jiu-jitsu. And also, I think it helps with emotional regulation, too, at the same time. You know, just getting all that.
I'm seriously happy with it there. I'm having the best time of my life. We are sitting there putting chokeholds on each other, arm bars, and just laughing our heads off.
That's really good information. Thank you for sharing that. It's really important.
The guys are totally stoic and serious, da da da. But us girls, oh, man, we are just cracking up and having the best time ever. And then we're like, I was like getting an arm bar put on me and I go, oh, look outside. The sunset is gorgeous. Of course, all
no,
of us don't have ADD, too. It's just something ADDers are drawn to.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's really good. That's great information. It's good to know, you know.
Healthcare.
I'll share it with my clients, too. The whole kickboxing thing would be really important.
Healthcare is another that a lot of ADDers are drawn to.
What did you say, Gail?
Healthcare. Like,
yes.
I'm an activities director in an Alzheimer's community,
oh.
you know, Alzheimer's and dementia. So what's nice is that I really identify with their memory loss. And they go, I can't remember things like, I have that problem all the time. I can't remember things so I was like, oh, I never have been able to. I was born with it.
That's so nice that you can relate to what they're going through, you know, because it's a horrible
disease.
And
the overstimulation, I relate to the overstimulation. I will notice before other people, like, this atmosphere is going to create some really bad attitudes soon.
I've heard a lot about the overstimulation with Alzheimer's. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, me too. So I know what they're going through.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can get crazy.
Wow. Well, that's great that you are there to work with them and help them. It really is. And you understand
yeah.
a little bit about that whole memory loss because we all get that. Do you ever have a situation where you walk into a room and go, okay, why did I come in here? Right? What was I looking for?
Oh, yeah.
Right? The other night, Steve was walking out of the bedroom, and he yells into me, okay, what was I doing? I said, don't ask me. I got the same problem as you. I can't help you with this one. But it happens when you go, you walk into a room, and then you go, why did I come in here? It's so scary sometimes.
Oh, I get it. I wake up, and oh, my God, I got this a washcloth in my hand and water spraying on me. Oh, crap, I'm taking a shower. I get it.
What happens waking up in the moment?
There's something about the water. It's an evil place.
Yeah, it is for a lot of people. They stay for hours. Yeah. Go ahead, Gail. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'll go, and then have no idea what I was going to say. Not a clue.
I've done
the
it.
The arm distracted me.
Yes. Yeah. No, I've absolutely done that. I have to tell you, I do it less now that I really live my life in the moment, so I'm kind of like, because I'm slowing myself down all the time so I can remember things, but it still happens. I have my moments where these things still come up, and
mm-hmm.
I just give myself compassion and say, you'll figure out why you're in this room or what you were going to say.
Oh, yeah. I don't get upset about it.
No.
There's a joke, and we've talked about it with some of the people in the Culver City group, that if you put three ADD people in a car with a non-ADD person and send them on a trip for about 20 minutes, at the end of that 20 minutes, that non-ADD person is going to be all jacked up. They're going to go, what in the hell just happened to me? Because the ADD people are going to go through this discussion. They're talking about one thing, and it changes, and they're focusing on something else. They forget about it. They're off to the next thing. And they arrive at there's a thread through all of it, but that non-ADD person's going, there's no logic to this. There's no reason, and I think they're on drugs. When the reality is probably they're not on drugs.
And that's the reason
that
why they're
going one thing after the other. But that's another, I think, another way that our brains do that, where we're doing something and then it goes to something else and then to something else.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I would talk like that. I would start on one topic, go to the next, and then say, okay, how did I get here? How did I end up all the way over here when I started on the other side?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the mindfulness that really helped me now to be able to stay on track when I'm talking so I don't go off and finish my thoughts, which was something it was something else I would do a lot. And Steve, when we first met, he would say to me, wait, can you finish saying what you were just saying? Because now you're off onto something else. And he was right. And he helped me a lot because mm-hmm. I would just slow it down and finish what I was saying. Yeah.
To the mindfulness, you talked about driving. So I go to the Monday night group at church, and there's a 2.5-hour session. In the middle, so you have a 20-minute sitting session, a walking session, and then another 20-minute sitting session. During that walking session, it is just that. I never tried it until I started doing it here recently, and I'm that big H person. So getting up and walking around, looking at the trees, and bringing my mind back to what I'm seeing, not interpreting. I'm seeing a tree, I've got to cut the grass, or I'm seeing something that reminds me of something else. But staying with that what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing,
right.
What I'm feeling.
Awareness.
And it's great, especially for somebody who's can't sit for too long without just going to that next thing. So it's been very helpful, and I enjoy doing that.
So just to take that a step further, when I talk about neuroplasticity,
mm-hmm.
so when you think about it, in the past, when you were taking that walk, let's just say,
mm-hmm.
you would see a tree and you'd say, oh, okay, I wish I was camping. Or you'd see grass and say, oh, you know what, I really need to cut my grass. Or now that you're experiencing that in a different way,
mm-hmm.
you're just noticing those things and saying, oh, that's really a beautiful tree. That's how we're experiencing life differently. That's what causes the neuroplasticity in
mm-hmm.
the brain. Yeah. So, you know, as long as you can do that in the shower, you'll be okay.
You're an optimist. Been at this 4 years now, and I haven't got it down yet. So I'm still relying on the hot water heater giving out. So
that's an idea. Cold shower. Cold shower would do it. That would really bring you back to center very quickly if we shut off the hot water, yeah.
I've had the hot water shut off on me before.
So what else do you want to share with us about yourself and ADD?
Me?
Yes.
Come on, you got more dirt. I know you do.
Oh, yeah, sure I do. No, it's not dirt, though. Jesse was telling me the other day, I don't know. I think I said, I don't know what to talk about. And she said, you know, just your negative stuff. And I was like, well, I've left most of that behind. You know,
which is good.
Honestly, if somebody were to undiagnose, because I don't have a technical diagnosis, but if somebody were to undiagnose me, I would be lost. Because since I discovered the ADD, I finally have a purpose in life.
Great.
And I have a reason to forgive myself for, you know, having been an idiot for 36 years.
Wow.
the other thing I wanted to say was, since discovering it, I have done a lot of bonding with both of my parents.
Wow.
My dad has not been a person to have really close relationships with. I don't know how to explain it, but, you know, it's like looking at his fourth divorce right now.
Wow. Okay.
And he and I never had much of a father-daughter relationship except when I was really little.
Okay.
So since I've discovered my ADD, we have this thing in common, and we get to, you know, I guess, compare notes. The day that I told him I had it, telling him, you know, I have this problem and that problem, and he starts identifying with it and saying, oh, yeah, and this and that, blah, blah, blah. I was like, so do you have ADD? And he says, yeah. And I said, are you self-diagnosed or did you get a diagnosis? Because I'm self-diagnosed, but you're qualified to do that, aren't you? He says, yeah. So, I mean, that's my diagnosis. I'm his mini-me and personality and all that. So, you know, where my dad doesn't seem to have much emotion. I'm a lot like that. You know, I've been called an ice queen before because I will shut off any emotion, except for laughter. I can't help that one.
Yeah.
My stepdad also has ADD, so my mom loves those ADD men. So I was able to help my mom understand them better and why they do what they do. It drives her nuts.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's brought me closer to both of my parents.
Which is really nice.
Yeah.
How did you and your mom do when you were growing up, since you had ADD and she didn't? How was that?
Ugly.
Okay. Difficult, yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not something I want to talk about.
Yeah. No, I get that. I understand that. I just think it's great that you're... I think it's great you're in this positive place about, even though it's a self-diagnosis and your dad has it, and you're in this positive place about it. That's what I love about this. When I was talking to you about the negative symptoms of ADD, there are negative symptoms, you know, like procrastination or emotional dysregulation or impulsivity, inability to focus, you know, they just go on and on. And the reason I mentioned that to you is because what Chris and I were talking about is the self-disclosure. If you start talking about some of those things with people, then they tend to open up. And a lot of that anxiety comes out. You know, they can talk about how they really feel. And I think that's important, that people feel like they have a safe place to go to and share. That's the most important thing. But I'm happy for you because you see this more in the way that I see it, which is a gift to me because of the creative side of all this. I mean, you know Reese. You know, she's on my Facebook page all the time, and she's one of the most creative people in the world. And she, you know, she's like you. She embraces it as I do and Chris does as well. I mean, we joke about it, but for the most part, we do see the positive side, which is great.
You know who helped me with that the most?
Who?
Tom Nardone.
Yeah, he's great.
He could have showed me the light, you know?
Yep. Yeah, he's very good at being able to show people the funny side of stuff and really help you relax with certain symptoms that can be, you know, perceived by others as negative. Yeah, he's great. I love Tom.
He's one of the co-admins on our groups and page.
Oh, okay. I get confused because there's so many people that are admins and co-admins that I just kind of... try to do my thing as best as I can, and then I got to go to work. Hey, well, listen, you know what? I'm so happy you called in. It was so great to have you on. And I'd love to have you back. Again, you and I discussed briefly about doing a woman show at some point where we get some women on to talk about their stories.
I didn't think it had to be specifically women. I was just saying in the the style of the view or
yeah.
Anyway, just where you've got a bunch of people, just kind of like what we did right now. There's only three of us, but we get five or six. And people
okay.
just, you know, boom, boom, come off each other kind of thing.
Well, try to get me some people to come on because you're the admin on all these groups.
I have a list.
Okay. Get the list,
honestly,
and we'll all come on.
I can't watch that show because I can't stand all the people talking at one time.
I can't either.
It's seriously overstimulating.
I know it is. It really is.
You think it'd make you feel at home, though, all that dynamic.
No. I can't listen. I can't do that. The Today Show, too, they talk too much.
Really?
They don't let it. I can't hear what they're saying.
I guess my brain works differently.
Too many people.
I follow all
of that. Too many people are talking at one time. I can't, no. I'm with Gail on that one.
Sometimes I just kind of sit out in a restaurant because I can't understand what's going on around me. Too much conversation.
Too much conversation. Hey, Gail, have a great Sunday. Thank you for being on the show. We're going to sign off, and we'll talk to you soon.
It was good talking to you. Thank you.
Take care, Gail.
Good to meet you too, Gail. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
So that was great. We got to have Gail on, and I'm hoping as time goes on, we do these shows again. We'll get more people to call up and share their story, and I thought this was a great show.
Ryan, she brought the funny aspects to it.
She really did.
That was light because so much of this is so serious all the time, but there are very fun aspects to this. And you and I laugh a lot about just the stupid stuff. The three people in the car thing, which I swear it's the truth, but it can't be all taken seriously because so much of it is positive, is uplifting, and it is a blessing.
Yeah,
it really is.
And you know, I don't want to end on a bummer, but I do have to share with everybody that my son, who's been in recovery for 6 months, and I'm so proud of him, but this week he had a real tragedy. His best friend committed suicide. And that's a tragedy. And I'm very sad for his mom. I've asked him to get her address so I can reach out to her. And I loved this young man who committed suicide. I had the privilege of knowing him for a short period of time. He was in a tremendous amount of pain, both physical and emotional. And I'm just saying this too because there's so many people out there who see this ADD as like a death sentence, and it is not. It is something that can be looked at, as Gail was talking about, and you and I, as something is a gift, and something that can really help us catapult our lives
mm-hmm.
to another place. And, you know, unless we have the co-occurring disorder sometimes of depression, and I want to tell everybody who's listening that if you know people in your life who are in pain, if they're in depression, if they're suffering with, you know, substance abuse or whatever, just try to get them some help. You know, reach out to them. Try to talk them into getting some help, whether it's medication or therapy, because the saddest thing in the world is when a life like that is taken at 27 years old. And again, I didn't end this, you know, as a bummer, but it just really speaks to where you and I and other people are at in our lives, we're okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to pay attention to what other people are going through as well.
We're all in it together.
That's exactly right. So I'm so happy to have you back. And I know we're going to have a lot more shows together because Chris and I are working on a workbook and really excited about that book. And it's hopefully going to be done in December so we can get it out. Everybody can benefit from it.
I enjoyed being here. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come back.
Love to have you. It's always fun, and it's always very informational as well. So thank you so much. And we're going to be back next Sunday. Not sure yet exactly what the topic of the show is going to be, but we'll let you know during the week on Facebook and LinkedIn, and we also are on Twitter as well. So I want everybody to have a great Sunday night. Enjoy the rest of the day. For those of you who are on the West Coast, on the East Coast, I'm going to say good night. And for everybody who's listening, please remember to meditate and stay in the moment. Take care.